How are you doing today?
Good morning. We'll call this meeting of the Ag Finance Committee to order. Again, a lot on the agenda today. We do have a quorum here. And Representative Erdahl has checked the minutes of the meeting for March 16th. He moves to approve them. Any discussion on the minutes? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Thank you much. Coming up first, we have the delete all amendment. We move, first of all, House File 895. And Chair Hamilton, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will be working off the delete all amendment, so I don't know if we have a quorum, if we can go ahead and pass that or we can wait. But either way, I'm going to be working off the DE amendment. So.
We do have a quorum. Let's move your bill first, okay? Move House File 895.
Did we move 895?
Okay. So you...
900,000. Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I'm just getting a little bit of additional information about some work that we're doing.
So let's go ahead and move your bill first, okay? Want to move your bill?
All right, so we have the bill before us. Move House File.
After you move it, House File 895.
So I'll move House File
895. Very good. And then you have the DE amendment. Speak to your amendment, Chair Hamilton.
All right. To the amendment, and I'll walk us through this, and then I'll ask staff to go ahead and chime in if I miss anything here, all right? But I would like to walk everybody through it. On the page 2, starting on lines 2.6, there's $250,000 per year. This is dollars that we're establishing now a pollinator habitat and research account. What we had done, working with the department, when they first came with the proposal about a pollinator protection account, I asked the University of Minnesota to come in, and so we had the experts, as it pertains to pollinators, come in and visit with us in the office that I occupy. And one of the things that were very evident is that there was not any research being done across the U.S. as it pertains to pollinator habitat specifically, because some very what you would think is basic questions as far as what type of habitat should be planted, both for pollinators, bees in the wild, and or for honey production. There's no answer. So here, if we're looking at investing money and producing legislation to tell people what they should or should not be doing as it pertains to pollinators, we need to have that basic information. And so what this line item here does is invests money to the University of Minnesota to do that research. The intent here is that it would expand, and I want to put this on record, for a period of 5 years to get research, and this will be done all across the state of Minnesota. To gather this information that we can use to make sound legislative decisions moving forward. So that's that piece there. It does establish the research account, pollinator habitat research account. The next line item on 210 is $300,000 a year per year to transfer to the noxious weed and invasive species assistance account. On lines 2.20 is $125,000 per year for the industrial hemp pilot project. On lines 2.24, there's $250,000 a year to expand the current capabilities for rapid detection, identification, contamination control, and management of high-priority plant pests and pathogens. Mr. Chairman and committee members, as you recall, the past legislative session, we put a strong emphasis on emerging diseases and food safety as it pertained mainly to livestock and poultry. One thing that we did not do was invest in this area as it pertained to plants. And so that's what we are doing here. On lines starting on lines 2.23 and then all of page 3 as well, this is all base rider language. Up until you get to 3.25. Starting there, you'll see the commissioner may use up to $30,000 in appropriation. That was, and that's for expenses incurred by the commissioner and commissioner's approved agents to investigate and resolve claims as it pertains to elk damage. And this was a Fabian bill. House file, I'd have to look to staff. Was that 776? 772. I stand corrected. House file 772, a Fabian bill. You roll over to page 4. It is it's all baseline language on page 4. I would like to make a comment, though, on 4.11. The department has $1 million each year to streamline the retail food safety regulatory and licensing experience. And my question is, at what point in time does streamlining start saving us money? And so that's a question to the department. This is an expense here, but if we go on, and maybe this is the explanation, it goes on and talks about decrease the inspection delinquency rates. So I'm wondering if we've already have streamlining done, and now it's just focused on the inspection process. So that's a question that maybe the department can answer later on. Continue on page 4, that's all baseline funding. No changes there. Same with page 5. That's all baseline funding there as well. And I'm going to look to staff in case I misspeak. I want them to chime in, all right? Moving to page 6, the changes on page 6, and this is for the Farm Business Management Challenge grants, we added the words on line 6.14 up to, we added that up to those dollar amounts up to $350,000 the first year and up to $350,000 the second year for potato breeders and for wild rice. And one change that we did make in the bill the last legislative session, it was $350,000 for potato breeders and $450,000 for wild rice. Talking with the university, they said it makes sense to have those dollars equal to. So that's where it was $350,000. And we added the words, like I said, up to, in case they do not spend those dollars, then that would fall back to the GREET account. Okay. And same with on lines 6.27. We are still allocating $1 million for avian influenza research on around avian influenza, but we also added the words up to on that in case they do not spend the entire amount. You know, the remaining balance would roll back into the agreed account, and that can be used for other research initiatives. On lines 7.5, moving to the next page, on line 7.5, this is where the agri language begins. And members, this is where on line 7.9, the major change is the word may. The commissioner may allocate these appropriations. And my intent here, and I expect to hear from the department as well, is on the agri fund. I believe that it was the legislative intent where we would determine how those dollars should be spent. And the way it is right now is that the department has total control over those dollars. And so what I'm trying to accomplish here is a transition period to where there are some many good programs. I'm not challenging that. There are many good programs taking place within the agri account. I just believe that we as a legislature should have more control on how those dollars are being spent. And so there's a transition period taking place here that will still allow the department to operate and continue on with these programs, but it'll also bring the legislatures as far as our ideas and whatnot into the mix as well on how those agri dollars will be spent. The other major change on page 7 starts on line 7.34, or 7.33, establishing and supporting farmer-led water management councils. Now, I believe in talking with a number of the farm groups, I said we all believe that we should take a leading role as it pertains to, one, I already talked about pollinator habitat, but two, as it pertains to water quality. And so this is also, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is in the governor's supplemental budget now as well, to establish this farmer-led water management initiative. So that's, like I said, in lines 7.34, and I thank the ag groups for taking a direct involvement in that as well. Then, if members, if you go to page 8, let's see, it's all rider language. Let's see. It's all rider language down to 8.3. Baseline rider language down to 8.3. And what this is a $500,000 one-time investment into Metro State. It was Representative Sheldon Johnson that carried this bill. He had members from Metro State come in here. And a few of the items that I guess I greatly appreciated around this project, one, out of the total dollar amount, they've already raised, I believe it is up to $700,000 on their own. And so we are investing $500,000 to get that renovated. The other thing, not only do we have Metro State on board to do this and to really further the cause on raising the awareness and getting people excited about agriculture, but they're also working with that youth group. I believe it was Grow It, and where we had a couple testifiers coming in. And so I want to thank Representative Sheldon Johnson and Metro State and everybody that's involved with that Grow It initiative to really focus on youth agriculture education activities. Then members, on page 9, starting on 9.3, we are investing $500,000 the first year and $500,000 the second year to develop and expand urban agriculture. Now, I talked with Representative Karen Clark, and what I'm going to be offering up is an amendment on Friday. Whenever I talk about urban agriculture, I find myself immediately trying to explain and defend. And what my amendment is going to do is because I want it to truly reflect what it is that we're trying to get accomplished here. Every single one of the individuals that came in here to testify pertaining to urban agriculture, they talked about community development, and they talked about youth agriculture education activities. Two major things there. And so what I'm wanting to do is anytime it talks about urban ag in this bill, I want it to say urban youth agriculture education and urban agriculture, community development would be the second piece. And so I'm talking to staff about helping me out with the language because that is what we are doing. We are, through agriculture initiatives, we are creating a movement within the cities, I believe, as it pertains to raising the awareness of agriculture, creating investments and building wealth as it pertains to agriculture, and then also in the process educating our children about agriculture and the importance of it. And I also want to say to all the individuals that came up here to testify on ag, the urban ag piece, whether they were stressing organics or, you know, metro initiatives or whatever, I greatly appreciated the fact that they did not try to tear down one segment of agriculture trying to promote another. I am greatly, greatly thankful for that because we're all in this together. And what I've said all along, typically what ends up happening is we have this, in ag, we have this us versus us mentality. Large versus small, urban versus rural, food versus fuel, organics versus GMOs. And really, there's no room for that. We are all in this together. And so the testifiers that came in, I want to thank everybody for honoring that. And the other piece, too, and I'm going to say it. up until just a few years ago when we started hearing bills on urban ag, and I've been here for 13 years, the first 7, 8 years or whatever it was, every single person that's been in this committee room have all been white. And for the first time, we are starting to see people get involved in ag, at least coming to our committee, of various backgrounds. You know, we had that young man from Little Earth, the young man that came in here and talked about ag initiatives in South Minneapolis at Little Earth Nation. We had individuals who represent the Hmong community and et cetera. This is something that we're seeing a change in demographics, and we're actually seeing families moving out of the cities to the little community that I represent of Westbrook Walnut Grove area, Hmong families that are coming out because they want to get more involved in agriculture. So I'll jump back off my soapbox and just simply say thank you. On lines 9.8, this is good food access. We're putting in a placeholder here of $250,000. Now, what I would like to say to the folks that on good food access is that one of the things that the challenges around all this is that the concern is if we are looking at simply subsidizing a grocery store or something like that, we're going to have additional pushback. And what do I mean by that? I used to live in a little town called Darfur. It had 120 people. And there was a grocery store when I lived there. There is no longer. And if we would subsidize a grocery store, it would be in operation for maybe 2-3 months before they would no longer be open again. However, if we thought differently, that little community, they have a bank, they have a bar, and they have a fire hall. And if we thought differently on somehow being able to work with those entities and deliver the products, specifically what people are ordering through going online and ordering that and delivering it back right to the communities, specifically what people have been ordering, or even use drones or whatever the case may be, I think we'll get additional support for that program as well. On lines 9.15, I believe this was Representative Poppy's bill. It's $40,000, additional $40,000 to expand farm advocacy program. 9.22 is base. 9.3, this is, I believe, Chair Anderson's language for the tractor rollover protection pilot program. And I want to thank Chair Anderson not only for this language, but also for working so hard to find private dollars as well to invest in this. So thank you so much for that. On lines 10.1, the language here says $180,000 the second year for first and second year for farm advocacy programs. And just to explain that, $180,000 is in the base. Then we're adding through Representative Poppy's bill another $40,000, so the total would be $220,000 for that. The remaining language on page 10 is all base. On 11 is all base language. And if anybody wants clarification on that, just say. Otherwise, I'll speed it up here a little bit. On page 12, everything is base. I would like to make a comment for the Center for Rural Policy and Development. I know we sent that bill over to Jobs, and I'm going to be talking to the chair of the Jobs Committee because there are some dollars within that bill as well for rural Center for Rural Policy and Development. And if you recall, we fulfilled our obligation to fund this, and I'll look towards staff here a little bit, and I'm going to challenge my chairman on the Jobs Committee because I don't think they fully fulfilled their obligation when it came to funding this program. Maybe I'm not going to put you on the spot. That's my challenge to my fellow chair, and I'll visit with them. Don't comment on that. I don't want to drag you into that. All right? Even though I already did. On page 13, it's base rider language all the way down to 13.19. On 13.2, the Board of Animal Health, there is an increase to the Board of Animal Health. This is for operating increase. on lines 13.25. Now, it does say agriculture policy, but I want to stress that this policy language is very related to the financial aspect of the bill. This is, again, Fabian's House File 772, making some changes to the elk program. And what this does is this allows where Representative Fabian is, they don't have access to readily available county extension services, and so we're wanting to be able to open this up a little bit more to where we have access to people that can come out and help do assessments on those claims. And that goes all the way through 15.21. Then on, starting on 15.22, those grants for the tractor rollover protection, this is Representative Johnson's language this is on schools, so that schools are not, they are exempt for the cost share dollars. All right, Representative Johnson's. On line 16.7, this is Chair Anderson's language. The commissioner may spend up to, it was 20%, but this is actually 6% now, to administer that program for farms and schools. And I thought Chair Anderson has found some good cost-saving measures to where we can implement that without having to spend additional dollars through the department. Chair Anderson's language starts on 16.10, House File 199, again on the noxious weeds, and this is getting the dollars at the local level to administer that. 16.23, the Pollinator Habitat and Research Account. This is the language needed to establish that. I will have a technical amendment coming up on Friday on 16.25. It talks about the dollars being transferred, and that transferred word will be changed to appropriated. On line 17.1, this is the certificate for export. We are going to increase the fee from $75 to $125. This would be anybody who is accessing a certificate to export out of the United States. And I talked to various stakeholders. I am not aware of any opposition to this increase, and unless we hear otherwise, that's where we're at, I guess. 17.22. Again, this is about agri, and I already spoke to putting the legislature back in control of agri. Starting on line 17.32 on the bioeconomy, that was the incentive program. Now, there's a one-time reduction to that. We did not utilize all the money that we had set aside for that account, and so we are going to repurpose a few of those dollars, but I do want to stress to the individuals that this is a one-time reduction, and we will fulfill our commitment going forward. I'm going to ask Mr. Sullivan on lines 19.34, if you would just explain that language.
Mr. Chair, members, the language on page 19, lines 19.34 to 19.35, would add these incentive payments the chair spoke of for advanced biofuels or advanced renewable energy, renewable chemicals, and biomass thermal. Those would be, the department would have authority under this language to use other unspecified agri dollars for that purpose should there be additional claims above and beyond the $806,000 that the department anticipates at this time.
Thank you. All right, so then rider language on page 20. On page 21, you'll see 21.23. That's where that adjustment, one-time adjustment, is being made. Page 22 and page 23 is all no changes, rider language. On page 24.1, section 9, we're asking the department once again to do the base budget report, and I wanted to give credit where credit is due. They did a very nice job putting this together here this last year, and I thank you for that. On 24.6, the Ag Emergency Account, now we're transferring $450,000 out of that. We're using those monies, a portion of those, for the Noxious Weeds Program. There's still $500,000 left in that account, and I want to stress, too, not only do we have access to this account, but if you recall the last legislative session, we also changed the language to where we have access to the full emergency account of up to, I believe it's $6 million now, but the governor is proposing, I believe it's $20 million if there's a disaster or catastrophe within the agriculture realm. And let's see. A few of the things that we continue to work on that are not in this bill, but we are working on other areas, and some of it is finalized, other is not. The Emerald Ash Borer, Representative Hansen, I know you've been a champion on this issue. I believe there's $729,000 in the environment bill, LCCMR, is where we're looking for that. For the Forever Green, Representative Bly, I know you've been working very hard on this initiative, and we had a very good testimony. I believe it was PepsiCo that came in and talked about that too. We are working with Representative Gunther and others on some dollars to invest in there too, whether it's legacy dollars or others. So we haven't we're still working on that, like I said. We had heard bills on education, ag and education instructors. We are working with the K-12 committee on that. New Beginning Farmers, I believe that was, who is that? That was Representative Pearson, right? And so I think we may have that in the tax bill or close. We're working on that. And then also on Representative Swazinski is on the shrimp piece. That is, we're working with the Jobs Committee on that initiative as well. And then I guess, what am I forgetting? I don't know what I'm forgetting. We'll open it up to questions, Mr. Chairman, and find out what I am forgetting.
Very good, Chair Hamilton. Thanks for the in-depth rundown of the bill. And we will now take questions from members. And then go to testifiers from the audience. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Hamilton. The Emerald Ash Borer that's in the LCCMR, I think that had been, that is a project that's gone through the process with the LCCMR rather than being the funding needed. It's more the research, not the implementation of the real dollars that are needed for responding to this. I was just at a meeting in my community this morning, and there are, in West St. Paul, there's been new detections. It's anticipated that likely in South St. Paul. So the $700K that's in the LCCMR is kind of continuing the research, but to be clear, we haven't had actual state dollars since 2009 to be providing assistance to the cities, or whether they're in the rural, suburban, or urban areas. So I would ask to look. I mean, we have some large amounts of money going here for you, and I'd be happy to talk with you about some of these potential sources that are within your jurisdiction that can maybe provide some money. I do have a couple questions. On the pollinator account, and I know there were a couple days where I was not here, but did we have a bill on that? Was there a bill on the pollinator habitat account that you referenced.
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hansen, we're hearing the bills now. If anything that wasn't heard initially, we're hearing the bills now. And I know that on the pollinator, the department actually had established or spoke to a pollinator protection account. And so what basically I am amending that to the pollinator habitat and research account. So, yes, that's where we're at.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair and Chair Hamilton. So, and that looks like it's coming out of the Agri Fund. If it's a research project, is that something that could come out of AGREET? I see we've got $9 or $10 million for research. Could those resources come out of that? Can they apply to that, or is that prohibited coming from AGREET?
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hansen. Potentially. Right now, I've chose to take it out of the area in which we did. So, yes.
Yeah, it looks as if it's a standalone appropriation here, the way the wording is in the bill. More questions? Representative Erdahl, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hamilton, or maybe someone else can answer. I know that there's been legislation dealing with a change in the number of animal units permitted, and wondering what the status of that was. I didn't catch any mention of that in here. Is that some other place? Do you know the status?
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Erdahl. That is a policy change. It's not in this bill currently. I believe that may take place in the ag policy bill. And I'm looking at the chairman right now for any type of direction on that. But no, Representative Erdahl, it is not in this bill.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious about the $450,000 on line 24.9. That's going back to the general fund. Does that reflect a target that was lower than anticipated? Or, you know, why is that going back to the general fund? And there's really a lot of good uses for that money in this committee.
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So technically, it has to go back into the general fund and then come back into the ag budget itself for us to repurpose those dollars for any other use. So it's technical. I'll look towards staff if I've Mr. Sullivan will be able to explain it.
Or Mr. Savory.
Or Mr. Savory.
Committee Chair and Representative Johnson. The language on Section 10 of the bill is, so essentially what's happening is that account in the Ag Fund, those dollars, that $450,000, is being transferred to the general fund, and then this DE amendment is repurposing and reappropriating that money for a purpose to be determined within the bill.
Follow-up question?
I have a question in another area. Thank you very much. That was helpful. The language related to the Agri Funds on page 17, the oversight, does that language still provide the department to do what it's done in the past? And I guess overall, you've talked about the legislature appropriating those funds as opposed to giving the flexibility to the Department of Agriculture. Do you see that as what percentage in this bill of the agri funds are appropriated, direct appropriations with the rider language? And then where do you see this going in the future? Do you see that percentage increasing?
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Johnson. So right now, what we're doing is that unless specified in here specifically, the department can still allocate those funds as it was outlined here in years past. So they still have that ability or flexibility. As far as moving forward, that would be left up to the legislature. We still have the language in here where the department can make those determinations if we do not tell them otherwise. Again, that would be left up to the legislature. I mean, for instance, if we have a new initiative coming forward that would not fall in in the definition currently under agri, but everybody around the table thinks that's a good idea, well, then let's make those determinations and allocate those monies accordingly. But it is not changing today what they can do unless specified otherwise.
Okay, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, Jay Hampton, I want to thank you for your work on urban agriculture and the language in there. It's wonderful. I think it's the first time we've had that in state law, so thank you for that. In the language online, on page 9, I'm wondering, I know you mentioned to me already that if you want to do amend, and I think the whole committee about how you might want to amend the language to include youth and community development, and I think that's fine. That's great, actually. I'm wondering, in the bill that we had before you, we also had identified some priorities to ensure that low-income and communities of color and Native American folks could be a priority. And I'm just wondering, and we also were trying to provide incentives for tenure. In other words, that the land could be dedicated for at least a while, and some incentives to help our cities and suburban and rural areas, even where there are small towns, continue to keep that land in that use for a while. There was an incentive. I'm just wondering if you're open to us putting some of that language in here that would help clarify that, because I think that would be very helpful and it would help ensure your intent.
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Clark. What I would like to do is both of us stressing here on the record what the intent is, and working with the department, I think, and we'll let the department speak to this as well, with some of those languages, some of those, and how that language was put forward, I think there's going to be some difficulty trying to administer that program. I think if we would actually, and I'm seeing a few heads nodding here too, and we'll let the department speak to that. Again, if we stress what our intent is and work with the department on that criteria to establish, continue establishing the program, I guess I'd feel more comfortable doing it that way than putting it in the bill that would specify each individual step, Representative Clark.
I'm willing to work with you on that. You bet.
Thank you.
And Representative Clark, just a question. You know, we've looked at these sites, and I know you'd like to have certainty for a number of years. And if the state were to help with this, what are the cities doing, or in this case Minneapolis, to help these projects get going and to provide some long-term certainty that these plots would be available for a number of years?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What a wonderful question. Some of our cities are doing better than others. I can tell you the city of Minneapolis just now in an area that I know just designated two plots of land that has been sitting empty, former housing, nothing on it for many years, and they've dedicated that to a project that I'm familiar with called the Shkigi Gitagun in South Minneapolis. In the bill we put forward, we put some exceptions. So, like, if they wanted to do affordable housing, there would be an option for doing that. But we really had put some incentives in there to try to, you know, encourage more long-term tenure. Because when you build up the land and you've put all the nutrients in and you've, you know, created this fertile place to grow, it's heartbreaking to see it lost. I'm going to tell you one place, though, where there's some affordable housing in the community. The developer has invited the community farm, the community garden, to actually come in and scoop off the top few inches so that they can preserve that land. I think it's actually probably the top foot of soil, and they'll be able to put that over on some new property. The park boards in Minneapolis, I'm not sure about St. Paul, has also stepped in here, and there's some parkland that is would be appropriate, and that probably would be less likely to ever be developed. So there's some movement. It's happening, but it's slow, and I think anything we can say to help encourage it will be appreciated.
Okay. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. Chair Hamilton referred to the Jobs Committee a couple of times. I think it was on the shrimp and the Center for Rural Policy. Could you elaborate a little bit? The shrimp was a $50-60 million request by the time it was all over, and what kind of conversations are you looking to have with the chair of jobs, and is that going to be a split kind of deal or moving forward, I suppose? And then what is the Center for Rural Policy conversation you plan on having with them?
Yeah. Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Mahoney, for the question. And what I need to do today, and in total disclosure, the reason why this committee was pushed back a day and everything else, I was out for a funeral yesterday. And so I will be getting up. So we've had some phone conversations and whatnot right now, but I have not spoken face-to-face with the chairman of the Jobs Committee. So I still need to do that. However, around the shrimp piece, I am under the belief that there will be language in the jobs bill for that project. On the Center for Rural Policy and Development, that was indeed initially, and the funding was being cut back or challenged, and we in the Ag Committee bipartisanly saw the need to fund that. And so we put an appropriation in the ag bill to offset those reductions. And so there's still a little bit of back and forth going where the jurisdiction does lie for the Center for Rural Policy and Development. We're saying we do not want that to go away because we definitely see value. But we're also saying if the jurisdiction lies over in jobs or in deed, well, then let's properly fund that. So these are conversations that we're having too.
Representative Mahoney.
Chair Anderson and a couple of our colleagues were here yesterday. Was it yesterday we had that? I don't remember when it was in our committee, but I have found you're correct. It does a lot of good work. It does a lot of information passing. Gives me a different perspective when I read their studies on what, you know, my district versus Chair Anderson's district. A lot of interesting things from child care to economic development out there. So I think it's a great organization. I like the studies that they do. I like to be able to read it and understand, get a different perspective on my understanding in greater Minnesota. I know when I was chair of jobs, we funded that. So don't blame me for cutting the budget on them. I'll leave that up to that face-to-face conversation. My question then goes back to the shrimp farm. That's a large dollar figure spread out over 10 years. What, if anything, can you share with the committee is your intent with that and with the Jobs Committee? Because that continues on. It does not look like it's a tax break, so it would stay as a base budget appropriation for, I can't remember the year it ends, but it's 10 or 11 years. Is that something that the ag community and the jobs community is looking to split? I don't want to tilt, reveal your hand, so to speak, before you have conversations with what is undoubtedly one of the best negotiators in... I better not say that. in your negotiations with Chair Garofalo. I don't want you to tip your hand too much, but please give me some... Because I have... It's not concerns, but I certainly something to watch when you're talking $60 million by the time it's all done.
This could be interesting, Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Mahoney. The last legislative session, agriculture, the House position on ag, we were able to negotiate everything and get the House's position on ag. And maybe you could... say what jobs were able to negotiate on the House position on jobs, but I don't know if that.
I would love to, but I think it's just inappropriate.
Having a little bit of fun. Chair Groff, well, I have a tremendous amount of respect for him, and he's a friend. We came in as freshmen together, and I got a tremendous amount of respect for him. The whole thing is, with specifically for the shrimp piece, that is in, my understanding, in the other body, that is in the ag bill. And it's under the agri funds. And the thought process is, those agri funds, if we all recall, that was captured from the ethanol producer payments. And it was Chair Junkie that actually established that agri account. And then when I was chair of ag here, and Senator Magnus, Doug Magnus, was chair over in the Senate, we had a $6 billion budget deficit, and we were we captured those dollars and brought it into the account, and we did not allocate specifically how those dollars would be spent specifically. Just a little history on that. However, the intent was to spur new business and economic growth with those dollars. So, again, that was the approach I believe the Senate is currently taking, specifically to the shrimp, and going and putting this in the agri program. And in the House, with the author of the bill, they have got a very strong author as well that's extremely passionate about this, trying to fuel and create a new business, a new entity here in the state of Minnesota, be leaders on that. And right now they're looking at having that language in the jobs bill, and along with working with us in ag. So I would like to see that. If it's in the ag bill over in the Senate, I would really like to see that in the jobs bill here in the House, and continue working on this as we move forward.
Just one comment, and I know it's not, the governor has been very clear about policy included in finance bills, so it's been one of my things that the themes here, first year on the Ag Committee, it's more of a learning process for me than we may have any bills in this particular committee. But one of the things that I've noticed is that we don't, the accountability back to the Ag Committee on the money spent is much weaker than in Health and Human Services, jobs, education, or any of the others, in terms of money in, process or product, and then reporting back what came of it. So I certainly hope over the next, probably not in this bill, but as we move forward, working with the two chairs of the Ag Finance and Ag Policy, finding ways that we and the people of Minnesota that spend the money, that ask us to spend the money, can have more accountability on what we're getting for the dollars that we spend. And I'm not saying we're spending the money wrong. It's just that it's really hard, even for someone practiced at trying to find the answers. So for the average citizen, it's probably near impossible. So something we should probably look at as a committee, both in finance and in the policy.
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Mahoney, and I do really appreciate your perspective, serving on the job committee, and it is extremely helpful to gain that knowledge and expertise and that perspective as well. So duly noted. Thank you.
And I would agree with that as well. Any other questions from members? Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Hamilton, you mentioned the farmer-led councils, and I don't think we had a bill hearing on that. So if this is the opportunity for that, and maybe this is something that the department could talk about, but from as the author here, what is your intent with the farmer-led councils? That's $1.5 million. I'm concerned that I don't want $1.5 million going to coffee and donuts for meetings out there to talk about stuff. We've done that. So what's your intent?
Chair Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hanson, you are talking about the water quality piece, right? Correct? Water quality piece. And like I said, this will be in the I am sure that this is also in the governor's supplemental budget. But what I'd like to do is we could bring let's have a testifier come down and speak to that. Representative Hanson, yep, to answer your questions. Okay, Mr. Chairman, with your permission.
Very.
Yeah, sure. If now's the appropriate time to do that, we'll just speak. Could we go into public testimony then, too, as well?
That was next Any other questions from members while they're coming up? I don't see any, so yeah, let's go ahead with the...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So, and again, trying to answer Representative Hansen to the concern there. Good morning. State your names and proceed.
Morning. Adam Burr, Executive Director of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. I can speak to the farmer-led council. So back in, I believe it was August, early September, the department approached us as part of the governor's Year of Water initiative to convene a series of meetings to discuss, come up with Ag Group's best idea relative to how to address this water quality challenge, a policy-related idea. And after a series of meetings, and there were a number of technical groups involved and a number of the Ag Groups involved, you know, what we came up with is a model that's based on some things that have been done in watersheds around the state. This concept of farmer-led councils, the idea we're trying to provide an opportunity for farmers to really have a say, to use the innovation that they have, their creativity they have, to provide some input on the ground practices to address this water quality issue. And so after a series of 4 or 5 months of discussions, that was a recommendation we came up with. It's not meant to replace the existing conservation delivery systems that are out there, the SWCs and so forth. It's really meant to spur innovation, gives farmers some ownership in this process and the vast amount of resources that are being spent on this water issue across the state. Really just provide a template, a format to foster the innovation, to spread the information about practices to fellow neighbors and so forth. There certainly would be a lot of structure behind it, a lot of accountability behind it. It wouldn't be we certainly don't want to waste any resources. So that was the motivation. We did present it to the governor. The governor was very supportive of the concept when the A groups met with the governor. And I believe that's why, you know, the impetus for including it in the supplemental budget.
Dr. Burr, just a quick question. I think a lot of us are waiting to hear if Bowser announces their alternative practices for the buffer bill. And I know your group has been working on those things. So what you're talking about now, would that help lend some expertise to try to come up with some of these alternative practices?
Mr. Chair, representatives of the committee, it's certainly not unrelated. There wasn't necessarily a direct correlation between the two, but certainly as part of the ideas that the envision that the farmer-led council would come up with, that certainly would be certainly part of the discussion is alternative practices. But it certainly wouldn't be limited just to a buff-related discussion. It could include things like nutrient management practices and cover crops and those things as well. We weren't thinking just narrowing it to a buffer-related and alternative practices discussion.
Yeah, you have been offering practices such as you mentioned nitrogen management and the split applications and things, and really are leading the technology, I think, on coming up with those things. So thank you for that. And Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And follow-up, so you mentioned providing input. Is that input to the soil and water conservation districts, or who's the input provided?
Mr. Burke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen. So the idea was is that these councils would be, the structure would be that there'd be a state advisory council that would set up the parameters around which these farmer-led councils would get established, and there'd be strict criteria about that. That these councils would then be enabled to hire a coordinator, and that's where a lot of the funds would primarily go to, is the hiring of the coordinator. The coordinator being the one that can kind of provide these farmers the information that's out there, really leveraging not only the state resources that are out there, but some of the private opportunities are out there. We have tremendous resources on the private side with the co-ops and some of the innovative practices that some of the agronomists and co-ops are using. So really someone that can serve as a linchpin with them and provide them the full suite of options. So again, in some cases, maybe this coordinator could be an SWCD person. We didn't want to be real prescriptive about it. The idea being there's flexibility and allowing those folks in those areas the latitude to come up with whatever model best fits them. Experience in other watersheds that are using this, the river watershed, the Whitewater River watershed, it ultimately comes down to that individual they trust. And so our goal with this is we want widespread adoption of conservation practices, and we saw this as an avenue to do that.
Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, well, members, we had legislative audit released on Monday where I think we distributed $200 and some million for practices already over the last few years, and that's just the legacy money. We're pumping huge amounts of money out there, so I think we may have got the altruists. My concern would be, and I would encourage you to go for those that are frankly refusing to do anything, because I think the altruists you've already have them implementing stuff, and they're implementing the voluntary practices through water quality certification, which we've pumped a bunch of money into. But there are folks who just will not do this. They're just, even if we provide them with the money, they are not going to implement water quality practices because someone asked them to do it. So I could see the opportunity for peer pressure to work, potentially, if you go at folks who just don't want to do it. But if you're going to folks who've already implemented the practices or are going to implement the practices, I'm concerned that then we have the redundancy because they're already walking in the door. But we have folks who refuse to walk in the door. And everybody else is judged by their behavior. And they may be in areas where it's very susceptible to groundwater or surface water contamination. So the impact of one individual can have a great impact on the public resource. So that's my concern. I see a glimmer of opportunity here, and I'd like to see if that's where you're going.
Comment or follow-up?
Yeah, I can speak to that. Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I think that's the absolute goal, is that we're looking to, offer another way to do conservation delivery to help in those situations so that we get more buy-in. And that's why you see direct buy-in from the commodity organizations and companies and the various ag groups, is I think we all have a shared goal of, saturated BMP adoption and improved water quality, and recognizing that in some cases current delivery systems may not resonate with folks, but when you have sort of farmer buy-in and farmer ownership over the process, it might lead to greater adoption of practices. And so I think that is the impetus behind this, is to provide another way to complement the existing mechanisms that are out there.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Bennett, since he's up there and hasn't said anything.
I thought you were going to just skip me. Corey Bennett, I represent the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association and the Minnesota Agri Girls Council. Just a few words. I think Dr. Burr kind of laid this out precisely as to what our intentions were moving with this forward. As Dr. Burr said, we also participated in the process this summer and fall, numerous meetings, long hours, trying to come up with some ideas in which agriculture can step forward and try to help out with water quality. We always hear that there's issues out there, that agriculture needs to do something, and so we came together to try to figure out, what could we be for? How could we participate in a positive way at the local level? How can we get people who may not be as willing to do some things as their neighbors maybe have? If we could get a farmer-led council at the local level in which they can come and talk about water quality issues that are unique to their area, what practices might be implemented that would be at a high level that could help with water quality, if there's ways that they could bring in individuals and be more willing to talk with their neighbors, talk to their peers in a way to have a positive outcome on water, we wanted to try to do that. And so we wanted these councils to be done at the local level, and we wanted to actually try to put some dollars eventually in here that can help implement those practices at the local level and try to help out farmers and help out their neighbors and try to get practices out there that will have positive outcomes. So we are supportive of this proposal. I want to thank Chair Hamilton for including it today, and look forward to talking with the departments and with the administration. Happy that it was in the governor's supplemental budget. I want to thank him for that. But we will be working with the departments as this bill moves forward and continue the conversation. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to just give a word of support to that. What you gentlemen are describing is really a process that I think stands out where I live, where there's been initiatives that have been coordinated by someone who's working with farmers, and really a group of farmers taking the lead on dealing with water quality. I think specifically about Seven Mile Creek, which I think is this model. But it's not only in Seven Mile Creek. It's also a lot of it's done in the south of in the Blue Earth River Basin, the Les Sewer River Basin. These are areas that I just happen to live in an area where we've got a lot of silt coming off the ravines, and so we've got a lot of work to do to improve water quality in the Minnesota River. And I think what I've observed is this is where it's working well, and that the key is that coordinator to help get it rolling and keep the conversation going, keep the momentum going. But the key is also, and I've heard this multiple places, I heard it at the Water Summit in reference to another part of the state, and I've observed it in my region multiple places. The key is also to get lead farmers taking the lead, and others, and the experience is that other farmers in the neighborhood then kind of see it and follow pace. And the other thing that I would hope that would be part of this, it may not need to be specific with this, but the work of actually then monitoring and documenting the change in water quality, I assume that's with it. When I saw this in this bill, I thought, well, one question I had is, why is this an ag bill, to be honest with you? I sit in the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, and so my question is the governor or are you folks looking at another route as well to help fund these farmer-led councils?
Who wants to tackle that one?
I will, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Johnson, always. Yeah, always. Looking for other avenues, other funding mechanisms, other areas of support. So, always.
Follow-up, Representative.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a final comment. I sit on the Legislative Water Commission. I really think that based on listening to set there for 2 years and listen to it, there's a lot of good stuff going on in Minnesota. And I think the key issue we have with respect to the concerns that Representative Hansen has raised, and those are legitimate concerns because a lot of money has been spent. But the key issue is really replicating where it's working well. And I'll tell you, I'm bullish and I'm hopeful that the farmer-led councils can help us do that and broaden that impact, because we've got to broaden the impact beyond some small watersheds. Thank you very much.
Very good. Representative Mahoney.
I just had the Soil and Water Boards in my office, for Ramsey County, yesterday, and they talked about water quality. They talked about working with the people in their districts. We talked about getting people together and having meetings and having conversations about how they can improve the water quality in Jarvis, Keller, and Fairmont, which are the two works in my district. What's this farm or led? Because they're led by citizens that live in Ramsey County, and two of them are actually live in my district. So what is different from this farmer-led committee than a soil and water board out in western or southwestern or southeastern Minnesota? What exactly are you going to do different?
Mr. Burr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, again, I would just say this is not meant to replace those situations where it's working really well. It's meant to be yet another opportunity for farmers to take ownership and have a lead in these discussions. And I, like Representative Clark Johnson spoke of, there's examples like Seven Mile Creek. And certainly the SWCD is involved, but it might be specific to a watershed that perhaps it crosses county boundaries and crosses SWCDs.
And, you know, it's where you have the farmers taking the lead and taking ownership in the initiative in that particular area. And like I said, there's about three or four watersheds where this is working really well, and certainly there's a relationship to the SWC. It's just a little different model. It might be at a smaller scale, too, where you have a neighborhood of farmers that are taking the lead in this. So, again, not meant to replace where that is working. It's just meant to offer yet another opportunity for farmers to be engaged in a different way that perhaps they'd be more comfortable being engaged outside of a local government model.
Do we get our question answered?
Bureaucratically, we did.
Thank you. Yes. Seeing no further testimony for or questions from members, we'll move to other testimony. We have Dr. Beth Thompson. And on deck is Whitney Place from the department, and then Karen Zumach and Jeff Hafner following in. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to be very short in my comments. I appreciate, on behalf of the Board of Animal Health, all that you do for the Board of Animal Health and animal agriculture and other parts of the domestic animals that we regulate at the board. The Board of Animal Health is very thankful for the strong support of the legislature back in 2015 during the outbreak of avian influenza. Lawmakers answered our calls for the need during that emergency and provided over $2 million to respond to that devastating disease. It's what it means to be a Minnesotan, to get the work done to the best of your ability, and when you can do no more, to call on others to help you out. We knew we could count on you for support for our work back then and now to help Minnesota's poultry and rural economy, and you came through. We're also very thankful for the funding you provided to our partners in the fight against avian influenza, especially the $8.5 million appropriation to the University of Minnesota to renovate and expand the Minnesota Poultry Testing Laboratory in Wilmer. The new laboratory allows us to better monitor several poultry diseases, and we're better able to respond. When Governor Dayton's budget proposal was released this January, we were pleased to see the 1% increase in our budget appropriation and thankful for the support from the governor for the increased costs for our agency. We're also very appreciative of your support of this modest increase, again, for those operating costs. I'm here today to tell you that our agency will always respond to foreign animal diseases and roll up our sleeves to get the work done. We're tasked with providing a service to Minnesota's livestock and poultry owners, and we will continue doing the necessary work to protect the state's domestic animals. The additional funding will help us do our work. Thank you for the continued support for our work to support the health of Minnesota's livestock and farmers and communities, everyone who takes care of our animals in the state. And that's all I have, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you.
Dr. Thompson, thank you for the work that you and your staff do. It's very much appreciated. Questions, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this is a question for Chair Hamilton. And I know we've done some changes with disaster accounts for things, but I'm concerned about if we have another outbreak for avian influenza and the amount of dollars that are left on the bottom line. And we have the ongoing rolling chronic wasting disease issue that's there. And we're only in session a few months out of the year. The money left on the bottom line is, if we had an outbreak in a time when we're not in session, it wouldn't go very far. And what I'm wondering is, again, we have a large amount of money in both Agri and Agreet, that if there was some type of contingency for an outbreak that gave authority for expenditures when we're not here, but only if there was some type of declaration or some type of public process. I'm just cautious in the world that we live in right now that if the federal government may not be able to respond because of budget cuts, and the state of Minnesota has to pick up the cost, and we're not in session, and we need to move quickly with a large amount of dollars, I'm concerned about that potential not being able to move. And to look, I wish we didn't have to do that, but I just worry a bit here on with these pathogens, if we should have something a little more than what we have in case something happens.
Mr. Chairman. Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Hansen, because I too share your concern. And that's why we collectively look for that, having access to that other disaster account, so that we could respond very, very quickly. I'm afraid if we would start pulling monies from whether it's AgREIT or AgRE or some of the other accounts within the within our budget, you know, keeping in mind that we are only 0.3% of the overall state's budget, I could see where we would spend those monies very, very quickly and basically potentially destroy many of the great programs that we currently have within the ag bill. And that's why I'm very thankful and hopeful that we will continue to maintain or have access to those, that other disaster account, which, like I said, I believe has $6 million in it currently. And I believe the governor's proposal is to take that up to $20 million. We still have a small cushion here to where we could, the department could respond right away to get staff allocated wherever they need to or whatever the case may be, but then also bridge over to that other account and have access to those monies too.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Thompson. And bit of housekeeping, I guess I forgot that we haven't adopted the DE1 amendment yet. Any other member questions on the amendment? If not, all in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same side. The amendment is adopted. The DE amendment is adopted. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Whitney Place. I'm the Director of Legislative Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. The Department of Agriculture does have some concerns about the proposed House agriculture budget. However, there are many good initiatives that have been included in this package, and we look forward to working with Chair Hamilton as this bill moves forward. The largest concern is the lack of investment in proposed initiatives. In his budget, Governor Dayton invests $8.5 million in general funds and $2.42 million in dedicated funds to help the Department of Agriculture be responsive to a dynamic global industry. The agency is pleased that the House proposal includes some of these initiatives. However, the lack of investments in the governor's full proposals will leave gaps in critical areas that could disadvantage Minnesota's rural and ag economy. The governor's agriculture funding priorities included enhancing the ability to respond to emerging issues facing agriculture, such as increased movement of plant pathogens and pests, eradication of noxious weeds, and pollinator decline. The governor also made a major investment in continuous improvement and IT infrastructure for the department. Many of the agency's licensing processes are still being done on paper. If the department continues to be asked to provide efficient services at the speed of business, investments need to be made. Additionally, the governor invests in new market opportunities for Minnesota. I wanted to address a couple of the comments that were just made this morning. To your question about retail food licensing, you know, thank you to this committee for helping us kind of restructure our food safety divisions within the department. As of right now, we have staffed up from those appropriations, I think in 2015. The training's done, and so we're setting up the processes to be able to track these inspections. By the end of 2018, we should be at the top of our efficiency in terms of those divisions. However, you know, there are factors including technological changes, increased demand, and federal changes could be the big question mark in terms of FSMA implementation. Additionally, we expect to go live with a new online licensing wizard to help applicants determine what types of licenses they need. within the next few weeks. And we're really proud of this project because it is in four languages, Hmong, Spanish, Somali, and English. In terms of urban agriculture, we're very happy to sit down with Representative Hamilton and Representative Clark to talk about some of the policy language that is going to be amended onto this bill. You know, for us, additional stipulations and grant programs requires additional staffing, and we're concerned with the reduction in agri admin costs and the increased you know, demands on grant programs and demands on our staff. So we're happy to sit down and talk about that. As you know, healthcare costs, salaries, and operating costs continue to increase. Just to maintain the same level of services that the department provides, annual operating costs will increase $2.67 million over the next biennium. The department was disappointed that this budget does not include any increased operating costs for our agency. Increasing demands on staff and programs without operating adjustments lessens the agency's ability to enforce the state's laws that ensure the integrity of our food supply, the health of our environment, and the strength of our agricultural economy. This budget would require the department to absorb the operating cost increase, which would have an impact on services across the agency. The department is also disappointed that this package had to be put together by repurposing of existing funds. We would prefer additional investments in programs that will greatly help the rural and ag economies. As we know, the highly pathogenic avian influenza outbreak in 2015 presented the Minnesota poultry industry with a $650 million economic loss. One of the reasons Minnesota was so successful in responding to HPAI was that a secure supply plan was completed for the ag industry. Unfortunately, these types of plans have not been completed for other sectors that could face similar emergency threats. It's critical to the future of the Minnesota ag industry to be prepared to host a potential of, to address a host of potential emergencies. This budget repurposes $450,000 out of the ag emergency account, which was established last session. The department wants to make sure that this account maintains the ability to immediately respond to emergencies, as well as to coordinate preparedness activities across all ag sectors. The department does have concerns with the changes made to the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Fund, or AGRI, including the reduction of administrative costs. AGRI's mission is to focus on economic impact and the greatest opportunity to generate agricultural jobs and promote business expansion in Minnesota. This program has created over 4,000 jobs in the state, leveraging over $200 million in private investment, and has helped to continue to diversify Minnesota's agricultural economy. The department has made strategic and targeted investments in livestock, value-added, biofuels, and new market development grant programs. These investments have paid off for Minnesota agriculture. Since the inception of the program, the department, the legislature, and the governor have largely said no to earmarking these dollars. Instead, they've allowed the department to be flexible and to make investments in targeted areas. We work closely with a number of organizations and constituents to help determine where to invest resources and which grants should be funded. This ensures that there is significant input from members of the public and the agricultural industry. While the governor and the department support the farmer-led water management councils and water quality improvement practices mentioned in the AGRI proposal, this further decreases funding for the discretionary portion that's left in AGRI in this bill. And the governor's proposal was for new funding. We urge you to reconsider the changes you've proposed to this highly used and highly successful program. In his budget, Governor Dayton invested in key areas that would improve the services of the Department of Agriculture to the state. The governor proposed $1.5 million over the biennium for continuous improvement in IT activities to assist the department to meet the needs of citizens and customers throughout Minnesota. This initiative is focused on making government more efficient and significantly increasing the number of online transactions licensees or registrants can utilize. While MDA is pleased to see investment in the noxious weed assistance account, We were disappointed that the programmatic funding included in the governor's budget was not included in this proposal. New species threats like Palmer amaranth are hard to prevent from entering the state without statewide resources to screen pathways of entry or to provide sufficient education and outreach to inform landowners and growers of the potential consequences. The Minnesota Noxious Weed Advisory Committee, which consists of representatives from state agencies, local units of government, private industry, and the ag community, has been supporting increased funding for the MDA over the past 7 years. The governor's proposed budget invests in new market opportunities, including a $2 million investment in research and market development of continuous cover crops. As this committee knows, many farmers are operating in the red today. If we are going to address water quality issues while keeping our agricultural economy competitive, farmers need new market options. These crops are not theoretical. They are actively being grown at the University of Minnesota and are being sought by companies like General Mills, Patagonia, and PepsiCo. Investment in this type of research creates a competitive opportunity for Minnesota farmers. The governor's budget also recognizes that pollinators are an important part of Minnesota agriculture. The governor invests $1 million of general funds to create a pollinator protection account that would address pesticide impacts to native and honeybee populations. This account would be used to invest in important research, education, and outreach, and the development of best management practices to help Minnesota farmers be the best stewards of chemistry that they can be. As we know, pollinator decline results from a complex array of factors, including parasites, viruses, lack of habitat and forage, and exposure to chemicals. The department is pleased that this budget invests in important research to address pollinator habitat concerns. However, the lack of investment in addressing pesticide exposure is concerning. The department's special registration review of neonicotinoids clearly found that this class of chemistry impacts pollinator populations. Investing in a broad strategy to address pollinator decline will be needed to protect Minnesota's native pollinators and honeybees. Mr. Chair, the department does appreciate the inclusion of some of the governor's priorities in this budget. Thank you for inclusion of the plant pathogen and pest capacity funding. This will expand the capabilities of the department for rapid detection, identification, containment, control, and management of high-priority plant pests and pathogens. This funding will ensure that Minnesota's ability to export agricultural products will not be slowed by introduction of new pest threats. Thank you for your inclusion of the funding for the Industrial Hemp Pilot Program. MDA has received 42 applications for the 2017 growing season, which will result in 2,155 acres of hemp. This increase in participation shows the growing interest of an industrial hemp industry in Minnesota. Thank you also for including the restructure of the certificates of free sale account. This will ensure that documentation required from foreign governments regarding food exports can be done more efficiently in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the department very much looks forward to continuing to work with you on this budget.
Thanks, Ms. Place. Any questions for Ms. Place?
Mr. Chairman, just a few comments, if I could, please.
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. And I, too, I've always appreciated working with the department in the past and continue to work with them going into the future. Just a few things. As it pertains to emerging diseases, we put a strong focus on this last legislative session, and we, too, are putting a focus on this. Starting lines 2.10 and 2.29, we are addressing emerging diseases as it pertains to plants. We did livestock and poultry in years past. And reduction, the comment about a reduction to admin for agri, we are keeping the admin the same. It's at 4% currently. We're keeping it the same. They asked for 6.5, I think, is what they had asked. However, that is not currently in place. That's what was asked. And so we are not reducing the admin piece. We did not give them the increase that they were looking. As far as repurposing the dollars, the department has already repurposed the dollars. One example would be the incentive program that we have in place. There were some additional dollars that were left over from that, And so the department did repurpose those dollars to be able to allocate additional funds, federal funds, for a totally different program as far as what it was actually established for. So they are currently doing this, and when it comes to repurposing dollars as it pertains out of the disaster account for noxious weeds, that's precisely what we did. So the department has already repurposed those dollars. When it comes to the agri dollars, again, I just want to stress, I believe elected officials should be making the determination on how those tax dollars are being spent and having a little more say in that, Mr. Chairman. And when it comes to pollinators, again, we are investing in this. However, I believe we should have the information before we start establishing new programs and new legislation. We need to have those research, we need to have that research taken place so that we can pinpoint. And we had a very, just a very open conversation with the experts at the University of Minnesota, whether it is habitat availability, whether it's mites, whether it's neonics, whatever the case may be. These are answers that we can, will be receiving through the research that we will obtain from the University of Minnesota. And lastly, when it comes to pollinators, Mr. Chairman, I supported your position on this to get the dollars to the local level. We don't. My position on this is we don't need additional people to oversee the noxious weed program. What we need is individuals that can actually address the noxious weed program. And that's where, Mr. Chairman, we adopted your language to make sure these monies go back to the county. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Any other questions, comments? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, I think you used really nice language, but kind of what you were saying is that you're being asked to do new initiatives, new policies, new new things, and you're not being given the money to implement them. Is that correct?
Ms. Place.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. So in terms of the agri account, so currently our admin cost is 4.5%. So potentially that wasn't intentional to change it to 4 in this bill. But
that's
okay. So in terms of, you know, adding some of these other stipulations into grant programs, you know, our staff is already at capacity with the agri account as is. So we'd be happy to work with the chair on in terms of what kind of administrative levels would be appropriate in terms of all of those appropriations. For example, for the noxious weed program, you know, that grant program has been in statute for a number of years but has been sitting empty, and what we are going to need is staff to be able to implement and administer those grants.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. That was a pretty long answer to what was a yes or no question. The department, you just reiterated that the department is at full capacity for the work that you have to do. One of the things that I hear from state employees time and time again is that they continue to hand us things to do with no people to do it with. And then they yell at us because we didn't get it done. What I would like from you, in much clearer language, so that my next door neighbor can understand, what are you being asked to do that's new, and what more capacity you would need to do it? Is it, do you need 101% of what you have now or 110% of what you have now? and how much it would cost to actually implement the things that we have asked you to do new this year. I have someone that I see pretty regularly bringing home a computer from a state agency to do work at home an hour or two on a regular basis so that they do not become swamped. And frankly, it's a little, I want to make sure I use the correct word and not get in trouble, disingenuous of us to ask state employees, when we pay them for 40 hours, to ask them to work 45 hours or 46 hours or 48 hours a week, and then tell them that they're incompetent or unable to do their work or yell at them because they haven't. So what I really want from you, and this is Representative Hamilton, I have passionately yelled about this in jobs. I have passionately yelled about this in every committee I have been in. So what I would like from the department is what can you do with the resources at hand to address the new initiatives that we are putting in front of you? Because frankly, when my boss, when I was running pipe, and he told me I want 100 feet of pipe in, and I looked at him and says, well, you better damn well be happy with 75 feet of pipe because I ain't getting any more in than that today. And you might be lucky to get that. He didn't have much to say when I only got 74 feet in because of one thing or another. So that's actually what I'm asking for from you. I don't think you probably have it at hand, but I certainly would like that to be able to ask Representative Hamilton that particular question, whether it's in another committee hearing or on the floor. So please get that to me. And if you want to hand it off to the rest of the committee, that's your own problem.
Thank you. And that's the assignment.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, we will get that to you.
Okay.
I'm the chairman, and she'll get that to all of us.
Okay, good. We have a number of questions left and a couple of folks to testify, so we may be going past noon a little bit. So anyway, you're 4-1. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Place, you know, I've been reading in the press that the Trump administration's proposing a 21% cut to USDA and a 31% cut to the Environmental Protection Agency. So does the department know yet the impact on potential reductions of federal funds that you receive?
Ms. Place.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, our staff is actually looking at that today. So I can report back to the committee on that as well.
Representative Hansen.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Place and Representative Hamilton, it's my understanding you're at a zero increase, or you're at hold on the base. This budget really doesn't have any increase, maybe a small amount over existing year funding, but you're really at zero and without any cost of living. We've got new initiatives in here, but this is a zero budget increase to the base funding. Is that correct?
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hansen, yes, there's like a million or million point nine or something increase, but pretty much zero-based budget.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this final question for Ms. Place, and maybe this is a different way of asking the question that Representative Mahoney was asking, but with the contracts and with inflation, so how many people would you have to lay off? How many vacancies would you have? And particularly with potential federal government cuts, what are the impacts of this budget and the federal budget for operating the Department of Ag to do existing statutory responsibilities and any new ones that we're providing for you?
Sounds like more homework.
Mr. Chair, I can actually answer part of that. So our operating cost proposal, and I think this is all in your budget packet, I think there's one FTE that would result, we would result in a loss of one FTE if we don't get that funding, and a lot of it has to do with our IT funding.
Okay. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanson asked my question was about federal cuts, what we may or may not know, so we'll wait for the answer to that.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, you know, to be honest with you, Ms. Place, it's a little disturbing your testimony, but I think you're describing a reality, and I just want to make sure I understand that reality, because you are comparing what the governor has been proposing versus to what's proposed in this bill, and I'm looking at the spreadsheet we were given, and I'm looking at line 13, and it looks to me like the governor has, I just want to make sure I got this right. The governor had proposed for FY 18 and 19 $127 plus million, and this bill, the DE amendment for that same amount of time is $118 million. Is that the difference you're describing? Is that when you talked about the things that won't get done with this bill? I'm looking at line 13. Maybe it's for Representative Hamilton, but because you listed a bunch of stuff that's not going to get done because it's not in this bill, and I'm probing. It seems to me that's a result of the different approaches and targets for this area. Is that fair to say?
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I've been working off of the initial 2017 budget initiatives that the Department of Agriculture provided to me and walked through at the beginning of session of this year. And Ms. Place is right when she talks about the IT investments. There's $1.5 million was the request. We do not fund that in this. And I've been talking with leadership and others about the overall investment for IT services, because every single department is asking, well, it appears that every single department is asking for this investment. So my question is, should this be addressed in a bigger package, an IT package, and then coordinated efforts in order to get government up to the speed of the private sector as it pertains to IT? The next one on the list was plant pathogen and pests, and I absolutely agree with this. And we do fund this in the bill. It is in the bill currently. The next one was noxious weeds. It is in the bill. We fund it in the bill. The next one was on the whole next gen piece on crops and the crops initiative. And I put the Forever Green initiative in this as well. I'm working on finding additional dollars to invest in this area. They're right, it is not in this bill, but still working on those funds. The next one on the back page, so that's one that is not in this bill. The next one on industrial hemp, it is in the bill. The next one is pollinator protection account. We have modified, if you will, the focus but it is in the bill. The next one is on waste pesticide, and they were asking for additional dollars in order to address the waste pesticide collection fee. But if you recall in the testimony, they said the shortage was X, but they were asking over double to increase fees collected over twice the amount that was needed. And my question around that is, at what point in time on this cleanup piece are we all clean? I mean, do we ever get to that point where there's no longer a need, or what role does counties play in this, which they are currently playing a big role in that? And so that is two out of all of them that they've asked for. And then the third one is the food certificate fee account. That is in the bill. And the last one is the clean water activities. And there will be clean water dollars that will be dedicated here as well. So out of all their initiatives, the two that are not in here is the waste pesticide collection fee increase and the next-gen crop, what they're wanting to do on there. Those are the two out of all their initiatives that are not included in their request.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was more on a macro level, to be real honest with you. I just want to make, maybe staff can help me with this. Am I reading this right, that in fiscal year, for these next two fiscal years, The governor was requesting $127 plus million, and this bill's rated at about $118 million. Am I reading that right? Are those the numbers I could be comparing to compare with what the governor's seeking to do and with what this bill's seeking to do?
Mr. Savory. So, Mr. Chairman, members, I'll go a little bit more in depth and maybe assist the committee. If you look over on the left-hand side, you'll see February 2017 forecast, the column, and that number on line 13 is $118,472,000. That is the base of the ag budget of the ag committee, ag finance committee. And comparably, for the DE amendment in 18 and 19, if you look at line 13, the total net general fund spending, this bill comes in at $118,472,000. So that's the piece that I believe a member spoke to about the fact that the committee had a zero target. So this bill is at base. And then to the second piece about the governor proposal, on line 13 on governor 2018-2019, the governor's proposal in 18-19 was $127,665,000. So you are correct in that regard.
Thank you. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. I have two questions. My first question, there may not be an answer for, but some of the comments that Representative Hansen and maybe Representative Clark had mentioned about changes at the federal level. And I was looking at the research on avian flu that the University of Minnesota might be conducting. And what we're hearing from the Fed is that there's no longer any interest in studying climate change. And yet when I read research about avian flu, many researchers say climate change is a factor, and we should be looking at that not only as a cause of what's changing in the environment, and this is a global issue, not just an issue for Minnesota, but how do we adjust? How do we react to climate change and the effects that may have on the recurrence of avian flu or whatever? I'm just wondering if you have any, I've heard some comments that even in Minnesota, there's some push to get rid of conversation about climate change. So I'm wondering about that.
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bly, there's no language to prohibit the discussion on climate change in this bill.
Thank you. That's reassuring. And then my last question is about emerald ash borer. Where do you see it's coming, and we're going to have to deal with it. Are there plans? Do you see anything that we might be able to look at to help folks with that?
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bly. And I will work with Representative Eklund and Representative Hansen on this, because Representative Eklund brings up a very valid point also. I mean, in addition to shade trees, we're talking about an entire industry up in the area in which he represents. And so that's where I want to work with the two individuals that I just mentioned, along with the chairs that oversee other accounts, too, to where we can put something together to address that.
And I think we have a couple more testifiers. This is a nice segue here to let those folks come up and testify, and then we'll come back again to member questions, okay? Or did you have a follow-up? Okay. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to add for Ms. Place to also add something to her list of things she'll bring back for us, and that is just on the security risk. So to find out exactly what are the consequences to not fully funding the technology that you have, and so what are the risks, what might be vulnerable, what might be exposed. I know there's data that you collect, and I just want to make sure that the data, I know that farmers and the farmers in the management field, they're very protective of the data that they are collecting, and they want it to be kind of aggregate data and not personal data. And so I'm concerned about that, and I'd like to know specifically what kinds of things you could see might be at risk.
Mr. Chair, I will provide that to the committee.
And Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Poppy. Past week, we passed a bill out of Ways and Means to extend the council on food safety and security council as well. So we take this very, very seriously. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Bring up our last two testifiers and have a question from Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was probably for misplaced, but Chair Hamilton might be able to answer it. On the Emerald Ash Borer piece in the LCCMR bill, is the Department of Ag going to receive any money to help with that, or is that just where do you see that going?
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Eklund. I can give you the information and everybody on the committee the information that I have currently. Okay. So,
very good. And a couple more testifiers. Thanks for your patience, and we wanted to get to make room for you, so go ahead, identify yourselves, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, for giving us this opportunity again to speak before you on behalf of trees. My name is Karen Zumach, and I am the current vice president of the Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Committee. We just wanted to make a few comments about Emerald Ash Borer and the significant need that we find here in the state. Thank you for acknowledging in at least the legacy funding that EAB is on the radar. $700,000 is nice, but it is what we can only call woefully inadequate at this point in the infestation. This one-time appropriation would do little to help communities, and it's something we feel is of utmost importance at this time, at this part in the infestation. Chair Hamilton, you mentioned that we're all in this together early on in your testimony, and as it turns out, many of you are in this along with us. Currently, there are 137 legislative districts that fall under the Minnesota Department of Agriculture quarantine. That means that your communities within your districts are currently being impacted by EAB. That means they are acquiring and amassing expenses to deal with this pest, and it's not going away. This is, as we keep calling, it's a predictable natural disaster. This is something we've seen coming. It's been in our state for over 7 years now, if not more. And it's important for us to acknowledge that if we continue to wait to help cities manage this infestation, we will only be spending more money. If you talk to your colleagues in states across the eastern parts of the country, in Indiana or Ohio, you'll find that people like us kept coming to them and asking for funding to help deal with this, and in the end, they spent way more than they ever imagined they would have to spend to deal with this. It's not going away. So the urgent need is here. It's now. And I would just like to acknowledge, as Representative Hansen said earlier, that in 2009 we had some great funding that came out for cities to manage EAB, and at that point, EAB looked like this, which was just one little tunnel in this one little tree. And I can tell you that just finding this one tree that was infested all the way to the ground this week, I can show you how it kills a tree. It's not just a little bug in a vial anymore. This is how a tree is killed by EAB, and you can consider this on the scale of hundreds of millions. So the urgent need is here, and it's now. And I will turn it over to my colleague, Jeff Hafner, to talk about what those numbers really look like for cities all across the state.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Hafner. I sit on the Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Committee. I'm the chair of the outreach subgroup, so many of your offices have heard my voicemails, I hope. And in a lot of those conversations in your offices and even in this committee, a lot of you have shared your personal stories with your affinity for trees, and we appreciate that at the Shade Tree Advisory Committee. The trees are able to touch all of your lives and all of our lives across the state. Issues that have been talked about in this hearing today, water quality and habitat and even climate change, are all made worse when we lose hundreds of millions of trees. We have a plan that if implemented, would reduce public costs and save that valuable green infrastructure. We look at just some of the communities across the state and what the costs that they're facing, and we just pulled out a small handful. These are areas that not only will incur increased public costs, but as that pest spills over into the recreation areas that surround these communities, those costs will go up as well. Bemidji, over the first 10 years of their infestation, is looking at close to $500,000. Crookston, over $115,000. Hibbing tops our short list at over $2 million, with Crookston just topping over $1 million. That is if they do nothing and just react to the removal of trees. So that will likely be borne by the property tax owners in those communities, which will see their property taxes go up while their property values go down. We believe that a centralized funding strategy that includes all of the tools available to us still in Minnesota would lower those costs and increase the overall benefits. EAB is here. It will continue to grow. And the sooner we fund a broad strategy, the sooner we'll allow communities to effectively respond. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony.
And Mr. Chairman, and thank you. And just something to consider, the example was four communities, $4 million in just four communities. And so you think about our entire ag budget. I mean, if we're going to address this statewide, I mean, my question is, what is the cost per tree and how many trees are there in the state? I mean, we did the math once, and it would eat up the entire state's budget for like 11 years to treat every single tree. And so it's a big issue, but it's also a very large undertaking and very, very costly. So we have to have these conversations to figure out what we can do. And, so that's my comment, Mr. Chairman.
Comment, sir?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. No one believes we should preserve every single tree. We believe that by preserving the highest quality trees in each community, we reduce the rate at which this pest multiplies and thereby reduce the rate at which trees die. That buys all of us more time to remove those low-quality trees that we can't preserve. It also buys more time for the homeowners who aren't eligible for state funding currently, more time to get their trees either protected or removed. If we wait and the pest continues to multiply at that exponential rate, we will be surrounded by dead trees before we have any time to react and before any tools are left available to us.
Could you give any ballpark figure, like try to save half the trees and the other half we would take out? Or do you have any numbers as to how you'd try to attempt to go at this?
We don't have great numbers of tree quality across the state, and that we would encourage every community to decide what is a higher quality tree for them. Typically, the question of quality is relative to the stand of trees in each community. So what might be high quality for one community might be exceptional quality for another, for instance, depending on what it is. What we can say is that our calculations show that you can preserve two mature trees for 20 years for the cost of removing and replacing just one of them.
Thank you. Any questions from members? If not, I've been asked to announce that please put everything but the agenda in the minutes back in your folders to kind of help with housekeeping here. So everything back in your folders but the agenda and the minutes from our last meeting. And just kind of the roadmap going forward, I had that someplace here. Are there any other testifiers in the audience who would care to comment on the bill? Seeing none, we have no meeting scheduled for tomorrow. But your amendments, if you have any, they're due by 10:15 tomorrow morning. So no meeting tomorrow, but amendments due by 10:15 tomorrow morning. And we will meet then Friday morning at 9 o'clock in room 10. Friday morning, 10 o'clock in room 10. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm 9 o'clock in room 10. 9 o'clock in room 10.
10 o'clock in room 10.